HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Peter Cosgrove. Peter is Managing Director of FutureWise. Peter, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks very much. Very well, thanks.
Good. Why don't you just explain, Peter, what FutureWise do and what you do?
FutureWise is a future of work insights company. So I suppose my background was in the kind of banking consulting world, and then I went into staffing and set up the Future Work Institute in a previous life with CPL and Ann Herity. And then I went out on my own and decided to do it for myself. So work with organizations to navigate a increasingly difficult and more fraught future of work at the moment.
Brilliant. One thing I'm noticing a lot, I'm not sure, I'd love to get your insights into it, is a lot of organizations seem to be solely equating the future of work with hybrid working and where people work. And this seems to be dominating the conversation at the moment. And I understand it's a major part of it, absolutely. There's more to it than that, though, surely.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So, I mean, I was talking about this 6 or 7 years ago, and obviously remote and hybrid work is just a small piece of it. So it starts with just a whole again. So however fast things are moving today, this is the slowest. And that's slightly terrifying. When people start looking at the future of work, it's firstly the disruption of all industries. So, you know, many of us have Revolut cars. We wouldn't have even thought of that 5 or 10 years ago, that our bank is something where there isn't a bank. And like in Korea, only 2 years ago, the WhatsApp equivalent in Korea set up a bank. So that's a messaging business setting up a bank, and it's got 30% of their customers. So when you start to see things like that, Apple Watch now outsells the entire Swiss watch industry. I can't imagine even 10 years ago that the Swiss watch had a SWOT analysis where Apple was their biggest threat. So the first bit is that's all happening because of technology. And we really struggle with technology because we think very much in linear growth. We would go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that means 32 steps would be 32. But if you do that exponentially, 1, 2, 4, 8, the 32nd step is 2.1 billion. And that's the bit we can't hold. So the last comment I'll say on that is Bill de Blasio from New York. I remember last March, he was kind of standing at the plinth going, oh, I believe there's mass closures of school in Italy. That won't be happening here. That's not even the menu here in New York. 6 days later, all the schools were closed because they just couldn't appreciate that nature. So the first thing is really that whole idea. The second thing is the future of work, which comes to jobs. Are jobs going to be gone? Are jobs going to, you know, where will we go with that? And, you know, there's no doubt that Kodak at its height had 152,000 workers. Instagram was sold for $1.19 billion. So there is a worry about how quick we're destroying jobs and how hard it is to create that level of job. So there's a debate about that. And then obviously there's a debate about hybrid and remote work, which is, this has only really been able to happen because of connectivity. If we'd had the pandemic 15 years ago, just a video calling, we wouldn't have had the bandwidth to do all this. So we kind of got lucky in that sense. And now people are realizing, hang on, you know, there's opportunities for me all around the world. But the flip side is there's also opportunities for employers around that.
Yeah. Okay. So much to unpack from what you just said there. In terms of the technology, for example, what anything on your radar, anything you're seeing coming down the road that you think will really impact the future work?
I think people who are able to build really strong collaboration tools for remote workers, and there's a number of companies doing it. Nobody's really, I think, clicked it yet, but. Like the challenge we have is people want to work now remotely and they've seen the benefit of it. But if there's real issues with isolation and burnout and so forth, so there has to be a way that we can do more than just have Zoom calls. So, you know, years ago, I remember a technology that people would study and they'd actually have the equivalent of a Zoom call of someone else studying beside them. And they didn't even know the person, but it didn't matter. It was that idea that you were studying beside someone. We have this kind of need to connect with other people. So I think whoever can create this kind of collaboration tool that we don't feel so alone, because Zoom calls certainly aren't doing it for us. We need something a little bit better than that. So that would be the one thing. Simple things like there's a great technology, Crisp AI, which is brilliant at noise cancelling the barking dog, because I have a real issue with every being on mute during meetings, because essentially most people have now taken that as read that I can now go and do other work while the meeting's happening, as opposed to going, I really shouldn't be in this meeting in the first place. So we need to get to a stage where people aren't going on mute, but actually we can still not hear the barking dog in the background.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? I think we've all been in meetings where we're you know, maybe there's 8, maybe there's 10 people on the call, and you're getting emails from one of them about something completely unrelated, and you know it hasn't been, you know, a time delay or yeah. or anything like that. When you're dealing with client companies, or when you're giving talks around this, is there any pathway that you think in terms of hybrid working and what that should look like? Is there any strong thoughts from you as to what should be remote, what shouldn't, what's the right level of coming to an office, for example?
Yeah, I see. The issue we have at the moment, which is companies are struggling with, we're still pretty much in the teeth of pandemic. So we can't really see this properly until we can all go back to work if we want. So once while social distancing and masks are still there, work isn't a very appealing place. A lot of people are going in and then they're going, hang on, I'm sitting here doing exactly what I could have done if I was at home. This doesn't seem to make sense because there's no network effect, you know. When there was 100% of the employees in, you'd bump into all these people, you'd have lunch with them, and that's not happening right now. So, but the big thing really that's challenging companies is this idea of your culture. Culture used to be this phrase, culture is what happens when the boss leaves the room. That's how you know what the culture is. But now the question is, well, what do you do if no one's in the room? And people would have often thought their culture was things like, you know, especially the Googles of the world, it was their ping pong tables and their foosball tables and their Friday night drinks. But like, they're all expressions or channels of culture. But the reality is your culture is your kind of your vision and your values that come from the top. And they're all linked to really important things like trust, clear communication, empathy. And if you get those things right, you can be as remote as you want to be. But that's the thing most companies are tackling with right now, because we like to think we're happy with people working remotely and we don't see what they're doing and we just trust them. But I think a lot of companies are still struggling a bit with that.
And do you think that struggle is it just because of the historic eyes on people? Like, is it literally just something we've been conditioned to almost accept, that people in a big glass office building all together working on something, whereas no one's ever going to say they measure presenteeism or anything like that. But do we need to now change the focus to outcome-based or more outcome-based? I'm not suggesting some companies haven't already.
It's an interesting one. They didn't have really clear objectives of what they wanted to do. You could check in with them the whole time and go, you know, you need to be doing that better, Declan. You don't need to be doing that. And you need to, whereas when they're away from you, you don't get to have all those micro conversations. But if someone has very strong and clear metrics about what success looks like, and they don't need those conversations, it doesn't really matter if they're beside you or not. But what I would say is there are definitely, kind of as you alluded earlier, there's definitely some jobs that, you know, it is difficult to not be seeing each other very often, you know, and you do need to have those connections. And I would say that if you work for, let's say, you know, some of the big employers here in Ireland are the professional services firms, they bring in hundreds of graduates every year. They absolutely, what's vital for them is to see their managers working and learning on the job. That's not something someone can just put in the manual. So that's going to be really hard. We've got some of these companies that have hired remote workers who they've never seen. And now those remote working managers have also hired remote workers. So it's just, they're kind of going from a really standard model of work to one that's kind of completely unknown.
Yeah. Interesting then. So for managers, for executive committees, boards, what are the things you think are most on their minds, or what are the things they come to you about, and what are they trying to solve? Probably related to what you just said there.
Funnily enough, the biggest issue they've got is talent, which you kind of think shouldn't be. You've probably heard that phrase, the great resignation. I'm not sure myself that it's as big as people think, because the reality is very few people resigned last year because it wasn't really a good time, you know, in 2020. But I think this hiring from everywhere isn't as simple as people think. So people going, this is great, we can now hire people anywhere around the world. The flip side is your staff can now look around anywhere around the world. And I think employers are finding this a real challenge. But they're also struggling with the fact that the business model that every business has right now is people sitting in their home, maybe sitting at a desk, you know, beside their kitchen. It's not a nice place to be. And they're kind of reflecting that I don't really like my job anymore, when actually it's probably more the pandemic than the job. So I think that is a challenge. So hiring and retaining staff is right up there as a top. The second thing is the whole area of burnout. Most companies are realizing that their staff at home are working longer hours, because the biggest, I almost think there's a little bit of a con about this whole work about flexible and remote work, whereas we think this is wonderful for employees, because, you know, it means that maybe I can go out for an hour lunchtime and see my kids' sports day, and then I can come back in the evening and finish my work. And that in its own is good. But what actually is happening is people are doing a few things during the day, But then they're never turning off. They go back in and do a bit more because I took a bit of time off during the day. So they're not giving themselves these guardrails. Back in the days when we just worked in the office, we had this beautiful decompression time, let's say about half an hour before when we left work and we got home. And that 30 minutes kind of gave us thought about the day. We let the day go and then we went back home. Now I put my laptop down, I walk downstairs and kids go, what's for dinner? We don't have that time anymore. And I think that's really important for business. So people are working longer hours than ever. We've got people who are junior in organizations who don't have a home office. So even when they're sitting there on a Saturday, they're looking over in the corner, they're seeing a work folder, and then that's bringing them back to work. So I think that's probably one of the biggest. And the last thing around that is, on top of all that, we've got phones in our pockets that are constantly pinging and kind of, you know, even if you don't want to link with work, you've got a work phone in your pocket and it's very difficult to not look at that red number one when it pops up in your email. People find it addictive and they do.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. What's as it is right now, what's the leadership role here? What should good leaders be doing?
They have to kind of reflect the behaviors of others by showing people what to do. So what companies simply are doing are things like digital team charters, where they're actually trying to show people, firstly, that WhatsApp, text, email, instant message, Slack, they're not all the same thing. There are certain times for certain things. So, you know, I used to give training courses before, not just when I was working at CPL, but I used to ask the graduates, like, if your house was on fire, would you like me to call you or email you? And they paused. And I was like, this isn't a trick question. It's a call. Email is not urgent. But the point is, we've almost made email urgent. So therefore, people email, and then they go, did you get my email? And you go, no, I mean, it was an email. It wasn't urgent. I will get back. Like, I'm still going to be responding within an hour. But this 1 minute response time. And what then happens is people send you an email marked urgent. You respond immediately and you get them out of office. And then it drives everybody crazy. So there's a brilliant book on digital body language that just came out, where they're talking about the fact that one of our biggest issues is we are doing so much communication digitally, but what we're not doing is then meeting them in person. So for instance, we've met loads of people before that their email tone might have been a bit curt, abrupt, and then you meet this really nice, friendly person and you realize, oh, actually, they're probably one of those people who go, okay. And all they mean is okay, not okay. But actually, when you don't get to meet people, we're making huge assumptions about people's digital body language. And this is something that companies are going to have to spend a lot more time thinking about. I would say the same with Zoom calls. You know, I've been on so many where people just go straight into the meeting. They don't welcome everybody. They don't maybe start by saying something like, God, I'm having a tough day today. You know, I'm really behind, being a little bit humble themselves. And if the leader does that, it lets everyone else feel like, oh, God, it's okay to be having a tough day. I'm not feeling great either. So there's loads of stuff that the leader needs to do, because really what they're doing is the behaviors that they want to show or see, they need to show them first. And what leaders are in a lot of places doing is they're telling everyone else what to do and they're doing something different. So a great example is, oh, you can work however many days you want in the office, but then all the leaders come in 5 days a week. So essentially the unwritten rule is, you know, well, work at home if you want a job and come into work if you want a career. But they haven't actually said this, but, you know, staff kind of see the kind of tea leaves and they see the hidden messages behind all that.
Yeah, I think that proximity bias, that nearness to your leader, if as you say, if you need to be beside them in the office, that's you can say all you want. But as you quite correctly say, Peter, if they're all there all the time, it sends a very different message. Where is the opportunity here for both employees and for organizations?
So for employees, firstly, it's going to give much more opportunity for an inclusive workforce from a very simple point of view. What you might see as a simple level, I met a lady and she said, you mightn't realize it, but I'm only 5 foot. I love Zoom meetings because it's so egalitarian. Everyone looks the same size. And she says, you mightn't realize it, but when you're meeting someone 6'5" in a room, there is definitely a power dynamic that just happens because of the height differential. The same could be said in a more serious sense for people with disabilities, that when everybody's on Zoom, it also means you've more opportunities as an employee to work in Kerry, but work in a big multinational in Dublin, but you didn't actually want to move to Dublin or you couldn't afford the rent. So there's real opportunities there. For companies, it's actually, this is a huge opportunity for cost savings. But my worry is how they're going to do this, because the opportunity could be a cost opportunity where we'll get rid of half our real estate, we'll put people at home, we'll cut down all our costs. But if you're going to do that, you're going to have to put a lot more money into ensuring the well-being of your people. The big opportunity longer term for companies is going to be artificial intelligence. how that's starting to take over a lot of jobs. So we're seeing it now much more in the white collar sector. It used to be all about robots taking jobs from machines. But they did a study 2 years ago, an algorithm called Law Geeks got five lawyers to go through non-disclosure agreements. And they said, can you find how many errors you can find? So they went through them, and then the algorithm did. The lawyers found 74% of the errors. The algorithm found 90%. But the scary thing is the lawyers took 92 minutes. The algorithm took 26 seconds. Now, you can't compete against that. So what I say to employees when you hear that is, don't go, oh, my God, all my jobs are going. You go, no, loads of process type jobs are going to go. You've got to ensure you infuse a human being in your job. And if you can't, and if your job can be, if you could write down your job on a piece of paper and give it to someone else as a manual, and in 1 month they could probably do your job, that probably means in 5 years' time that job won't exist. So you've got to make sure that you're really focusing on that. And that's kind of finally point in this is that's one of my worries about the Zoom kind of whole technology is it's a 2D experience, and you don't build bonds, you don't build rapport, all that stuff that we get through evolution, face-to-face, mirror neurons, breath sinking, and we get this kind of rapport. You don't get this on technology, and we end up kind of blaming the other person when actually it's default to the technology. So that's the one thing we can't lose, which is we need to actually be still meeting people in person.
Yeah, I was chatting to someone recently, and they described it as, you know, you've lost the ability to break bread with people almost, you know, in the remote environment, which is a good way of putting it. And just back to the AI, if you don't mind, for 1 second. Where is that now in terms of affordability for your average company? Is it still a very expensive sort of process to, or not process, sorry, is it still an expensive technology to realistically incorporate into your organization? Does it only work for, you know, the traditional robotic process automation, you know, high volumes, you know, strict parameters? Where is it at now?
No, well, see, the kind of one thing people don't realize about AI is there's a lot of work for you to do as an employer either way. There's very little will ever come in. You don't just plug it in and it works. A lot about it is understanding what you do, and there's going to be a lot of trial and error. So really what you've got to do at the start is you've got to really invest in it. And, you know, it doesn't have to be one of the big RPA players, but you actually have to. So back in the days of recruitment, we were using AI to try and kind of match employers with CVs. And we found that it's so much more difficult than you think. People think it's easy, but the reality is, you know, oh, that person's going to want this job because it's only 15 minutes away. And they go, oh, I want to work an hour away. Well, why would you ever want to work an hour away from your job? Like, that doesn't make any sense. That's the point. People aren't rational. They're just too irrational at that stuff. What it's good at is getting you to a long list, but not to get you to the right hire. But it took us a lot of work of going through the data, refining the data, changing, you know, so it's not just about the AI. It's actually about very much working along with it. So the AI needs these big data sets. So the key thing for organizations is to make sure you're capturing all your data and you're keeping that, which will make it a lot easier.
Final thing on that, Peter, what are you excited about in that space?
Do you know what? Like, I'm most excited about the fact that, you know, I read a book a couple of years ago called Lobotics, and they talk about the fact Google Translate at the moment, I don't know if you've used it recently, it's very good compared to what it was 2 years ago. And he told a story in the book that they took about 50 million pieces of documentation from the EU courts of justice and other EU buildings, where I'm sure you realize they're obviously doing constant translation of about 23 languages. But if you think about it, all these documents are perfect translations of real people by other real people. They gave that all to AI, and then literally because of how good the computation is, really, really quickly, it improved its AI dramatically. And the same with Japanese, did the same thing then. So his view is that within 8 to 10 years' time, every person in the world will essentially be able to speak English as a first language or French as a first language, because it'll be that good. So the opportunity then is, you know, we can work anywhere in any language. And I just think it's really hard to even contemplate that. So that's the one. The biggest other opportunity wouldn't be more for AI is the whole area of quantum computing. Google came out recently with a prototype quantum computer. But they said it managed to do a calculation in 200 seconds that would take the average supercomputer 10,000 years. And again, I talk about this stuff and I still cannot get my head around quantum computing. It's just, you know, the speed difference is just outrageous in terms of how much stronger it is. So you think about how fast things are moving today, and then the biggest company in the world, Rigetti Consulting, is in quantum computing. Nobody knows when we'll absolutely get it right. But when we do, it's just, it's not, it's more than a game changer, but like, it's just almost slightly terrifying as well.
Peter, thanks so much for joining us today. Peter Cosgrove is MD of FutureWise. I think your passion comes across for this stuff, Peter, which is it's great to see. And I would encourage anyone listening to seek you out either when you're speaking or indeed with FutureWise. If people want to talk to you, what's the best way to get in contact?
Yeah, their website's futurewise.ie, or I'm at peter@futurewise.ie.
Brilliant, Peter. Thanks for joining
us. And obviously, if given, you know, two books, Fun Unplugged and Family Fun Unplugged, if they want to actually get their kids off their digital devices. That was the reason for the book, because actually I have a personal kind of journey to try and get as many kids to be reading and not on the digital devices, which I think is only becoming more of a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll link to them below the podcast so people can click straight through to that. Peter, thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you very much.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.